You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 26 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters, Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kuntz, markets, U.S. back at all-time highs. Peter Little from Anchor, inflation, what's all the fuss? And then talking business rescue, is it working? Specifically, is it working for shareholders? The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Sasria gives mandate to insurers to settle smaller claims immediately. Claims up to 50,000 Rand, which is small, but for small retailers and the like, probably actually within their zone. There will obviously be process and etc., but it does speed the process. Business Day, Ramaphosa brings back the 350 Rand grant. That's for about 9.5 million unemployed people. It's about 3.5 billion ZAR a month. It runs until March, which makes me think that's budget in February, financial year end for government. Maybe we'll see it extended. Morning markets, US green. S&P up 1%, all-time high. NASDAQ up 1.2%, all-time high. Asia, well, we've got Sydney literally doing nothing, flat. Tokyo up 1.4%. Commodities sees gold, 1,811. Rand, 1486 to the dollar. Top 40 looking for a red open. Down, ooh, just changed, about 410 points. That's, about 0.7%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Nick Kuntz from portfolio manager Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning time. Nick, over the last couple of weeks when we have chatted, we've talked around U.S. earnings seasons. We've talked around buy the dip. We've talked around all-time highs. It's coming together. The earnings are coming through solidly. The buy the dips are working and U.S. markets are flying.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, a combination of all those putting into the pot, equaling a really strong sort of turnaround in markets, bull markets. I mean, we had a brief little wobble on Monday, didn't we?
Yeah.
Sort of a little bit of nerves coming in, but I mean, to put things in perspective, we're up even 2% from where we were on Monday. So yeah, Four solid days on the trot. Dow Jones closing above 35,000 for the first time. NASDAQ above 15,000. And there's just a lot of, I think you mentioned the buy the dip there. And I just think, you know, over the last decade or so, you know, the investors have been rewarded for taking on the risk. As soon as there's a little dip in the markets, you buy it. Throw that in with the fear of missing out, the TINA. There's also the central bank support. All that just makes me believe until we see this market rolling over, it looks like the trend continues to just be from the bottom left of the screen to the top right.
So our market, not so much bottom, yes, but sort of sideways, not at those highs. But I've got to look at that Rand, which has really crashed out in the last week or so, could help our miners. I mean, could we perhaps even see new highs this week, particularly if the miners follow through?
Yeah, we could. I mean, it's very much as you said, but it is a Rand story. It's not necessarily. Yes, we've had a little bit of a weaker dollar in a couple of days, but a stronger dollar in a couple of days. But majority, it's been the Rand. I mean, I looked at the hedges. If you look at the crosses like Russian ruble, Turkish lira, the other EMs, sort of usual suspects, they've kind of been flat on the week. So don't fool ourselves. This is very much a Rand story, and I think investors are starting to get a little bit nervous after the riots of a week or so. Couple of weeks ago. But yes, Rand hedges back in favor. I imagine commodities back on track as well. A little bit nervous. There's a bit of regulatory rule issues again with China coming in the headlines late yesterday. Tencent down 6.5% this morning, which is going to put the brakes a little bit in our market. But I think the Rand hedges continue to be in play for the week.
Yeah, but that Tencent might be the risk there. A quick last one. We had the Distill update just before the open on Friday. A very strong update.
Yeah, they were good.
But $170, that stock's priced, eh?
Yeah, it's priced for perfection, but I mean, you know, this is also, don't forget you've got the Heineken premium in there as well.
Yeah.
And that's going to keep a sort of a, at least a bit of a floor on this price. If that, look, if that Heineken deal decides not to renew their core share, pulls away, and the stock's 130 again very quickly. But I do think that's going to keep it at that distal elevated. And look, and the earnings weren't bad. I mean, they weren't bad earnings, but as you said, priced to perfection at the moment.
Yeah, we are absolutely seeing that there. Nick Kuntz, portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate that early morning time. Celebrate with MoneyWeb this August for our 23rd birthday. You can win a two-night stay for two at any Soho Sun Hotel in South Africa, and a lucky draw for our Insider Gold subscribers only. All you have to do is sign up before 17 August to become a subscriber. For just 63 Rand a month, MoneyWeb's Insider's Gold subscription offers you exclusive high-end financial tools and data to help you make better investment decisions. Go to moneyweb.co.za and click on competition for more details.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Peter Little, fund manager at Anchor Capital. Peter, appreciate the very early morning time. Talking around inflation, you put out a note on the Anchor website last week. A couple of points I want to come to. The one that really, really struck me is perhaps not core to this point, but it is a sense of who sort of is better at predicting in inflation relative to what, sort of the what it is. And consumers, me and you and listeners, very poor at it. Market, not very good at predicting inflation either. Typically, we're overly pessimistic.
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. The reality is nobody's particularly good at predicting inflation, which is not great, but yeah, we try our best.
Yeah, and I suppose to the point, I mean, it is difficult, and hence we're seeing all the talk around it. And your article in particular was, what's all that fuss about? What are we seeing about it? Your sense, I mean, how likely are we to see persistent higher U.S. inflation? There's a lot of data in there, but a lot of it is really, I mean, the transitory and the charts that you put into the article really do sort of support that transitory story.
Yeah, so certainly the stuff that everybody seems to be worried about, that's causing inflation to spike now, we don't think there's sort of two baskets that we pick out of that inflation, out of the inflation basket that make up about 30% of the total basket. Mm. And as you say, it's either stuff that was heavily discounted to try and attract business during the pandemic. And that's obviously seeing prices normalize off that low base. Obviously, that can't carry on forever. So that once that stuff's in the base, that'll wane. And then the other basket is the goods that are seeing supply bottlenecks. So particularly stuff linked to the computer chip segment, so vehicles in particular. And they'll figure out a way to sort out those bottlenecks. It'll probably take a few months. But again, that's stuff that we think will be transitory. So we're not saying that you don't necessarily have to worry about inflation. We're just saying that the stuff that's causing it to spike now is not the stuff that's going to, ultimately cause us long-term structural inflation problems.
Yeah, and that is that structural, that is the issue. And that then brings us to the likelihood of meaningful higher rates and yields. And you make a great point that U.S. households, U.S. financial sector, U.S. government, truthfully, it went into the COVID crisis significantly better off than in the 2008 global financial crisis. It was just better balance sheets, a healthier financial space and economy, which means the coming out, and hence the worries around structural inflation, higher yields is mooted.
Yeah, certainly for consumers and corporates, the balance sheet worries are not really there because the U.S. government basically took all the pain during the pandemic, so it increased its debt fairly substantially in lieu of basically the sort of man on the street and the companies having to do that. So yeah, that's helped a lot. So higher rates. won't put as much pressure on the private sector coming out of this.
And then the concern comes, so there's two issues. One is rate increases. The more immediate issue, perhaps, is that tapering and a potential taper tantrum. We certainly saw a fairly significant one in 2013 when the Fed tried to sort of taper down and reduce spend. You're saying that actually, hang on a second, we're well off better than it was in 2013. The rate of QE is larger, but actually a smaller portion of new issues. And that taper tantrum, we might see one, but it will probably be smaller and less tantrumy.
Yeah, so we think, I mean, we look at the differences. For a start, the difference this time is we actually know kind of, you know, we've been through a taper before. We sort of know what to expect. So it's not completely, you know, wandering into the dark here. But just because the size of the balance sheet has increased and also the size of the U.S. U.S. government issuance has increased so much, we're only seeing the government take up about 7% of the issuance every month. I think in the previous pandemic, they were about 15% of the the previous crisis, yeah. They were about 15% of issuance. So when they step away, there's a much smaller hole for the rest of the market to kind of pick up the slack this time. So we think that's pretty helpful. We've seen rates kind of back up in anticipation of this taper happening now. So, whereas the previous time kind of markets were slightly more sanguine about what might happen, and so they had sort of further to fall or further to rise when the taper actually started happening. So we think those things are kind of helpful this time. We know what's happening. You know, there's a smaller hole being left by the Fed stepping away, and rates have already backed up a little bit, so it should. We think that will make the taper impact ultimately slightly less. Less aggressive than it was last time.
Yeah, I like that point, that we've actually been down this road before. It does give us a little more experience. I mean, the conclusion then which you draw is that, in essence, I mean, that really we will see rates go higher. They're unlikely to be significantly moving, but they're still well below normal rates, perhaps, although I don't know what normal is these days. And hence, impact to stock market, the fears that are out there are perhaps unwarranted.
Yeah, so we sort of forecast that we think that 10-year rates will back up towards 2% over the next 12 months. So they've still got a way to sell off from here. But in the greater context of things, that's still not particularly attractive if we think inflation's around 2% probably. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still negative real rates, so not particularly exciting. And we think, you know, the stock market is still much more attractive on a relative basis than this. You know, the search for yield is not going away just because we've got 2% government bond rates. Even though that's higher than now, it's still not attractive.
Yeah, and you point out in the 90s, cash was 5.2. In the 2000s, the 10-year was 4.2. 2% is not thrillingly exciting there. Peter Little, fund manager, Anchor Capital, appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with Eric Levenstein, Director at Workmen's Attorneys, also Chairperson, South African Restructuring and Solvency Practitioners Association. Eric, appreciate the early morning. I keep on coming back to business rescue because it's an important part of our sort of, you know, economic landscape, and of course pandemic. We've seen a number of companies go into business rescue over the last year and a half of the pandemic. Senses, it's working as it's meant to. Comair, Edcon, even SAA, the process has worked as it's expected to, and enabled these companies to restructure and come out the other side.
Yes, thanks, Simon. And I must say that when you look back over the last 10 years when we first got the business rescue legislation, I think we've seen a really good track record over the years, not just with companies coming out of the business rescue process, but also opportunities for third-party investors, savvy investors, perhaps with some cash coming along and buying some of these assets or companies out of business rescue. So I think the traction has certainly landed here in South Africa. I think we're aligned now with what's been happening in international markets with distressed debt, with distressed companies. And I think the South African market is becoming more confident in the business rescue process. We've had some really good precedents set by our courts. We've got some good business rescue practitioners who know what they're doing. And I think the banking fraternity and the financial institutions have got far more confidence and ability to restructure and buy into the restructuring of companies, which is very important for South Africa and certainly important for our economy.
Yeah, and I take that. I mean, it has been a decade or so, and we are smarter at it. And one of the implications is that for companies going into business rescue, sooner rather than later is always better. And if we've sort of got that confidence in the system, a company's probably going to be comfortable, and comfortable maybe not quite the right word, to go into business rescue because the process is working. They get in sooner, they're going to come out better.
Simon, it's about directors and them understanding the business rescue process and further understanding the opportunities that might flow from the business rescue system. Now, a company that's financially stressed can't pay its debts. Mm-hmm. Directors need to understand how that works. They need to engage early enough so that when they do go through a restructuring, there's still some value left to be restructured on a basis where either there's a third-party buyout or the company returns to solvency and can continue to trade. So I think if directors understand how it works, I think we're going to see more and more buy-in from companies that rather get in early enough that there's still value in the system to enable a turnaround and a restructuring. And, you know, obviously I'd love to be able to sit down and lecture directors of these companies, but that's not going to happen. So I think the more we speak about it, I think it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at Sarepa, we certainly run a lot of webinars and have a lot of information available on our website about business rescue. And I think directors need to understand it a bit better.
And then for the key stakeholders, and here I'm thinking particularly unions, labor, and then shareholders. I mean, how important are they in the process, and has it been working for those stakeholders?
Well, Simon, it's interesting. Shareholders in a business rescue certainly play a back seat. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in the SAA example, government as shareholder played a major role. But in the traditional business rescue, shareholders have to sit back and see how the creditors are dealt with in the business rescue, because after all, it's about creditor money. It's about getting them a dividend better than what they would get in liquidation. So shareholders certainly do not play a major role. Trade unions we've seen becoming far more active in the last, let's say, 6 to 8 months, perhaps last year as well, and particularly as an example in the SAA matter. And where trade unions understand that let's rather examine a business rescue opportunity, let's appoint the right practitioner and work together with that practitioner to save jobs. Now, of course, you're always going to get retrenchment.
Yeah.
You're always going to get some fallout from a business rescue process, but you'd hope that the majority of jobs are kept intact. And job preservation has always been the driver for business rescue, and particularly when government brought this legislation onto our statute books, I think the job market and preservation of jobs was a key factor. So I think trade unions are certainly starting to play a more active role in bringing matters to a head and sometimes, in fact, insisting that the directors file for rescue.
Yeah, in short, it's working. It's a good piece of legislation, and it's an important piece of legislation that does work, that does do as it says on the sticker. Eric Liebenstein, Director of Wackman's Attorneys, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. The poll that we asked you on Friday, we were chatting offshore health stocks with Gary Boyson, the new Signia Health ETF. And we asked, do you like the sector? Two options on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The majority of you were concerned about regulation. Only just the majority, but that's where I sit. I do worry about regulation. Although you can kind of, you know, Johnson & Johnson, which Gary was talking about, you can, that's less of an issue because they got, that's such a broad business. And of course, the Signia ETF, 150 stocks in there. So again, the broadness to it. Today we were chatting with Peter Little around that US inflation, and our poll on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles, you can also have your say. Is US inflation worrying you, especially regarding an earlier than expected rate increase? Yes, you are worried, not at all waiting and watching. I'm not worried, but I'll be honest, I'm still watching, because there's always risk, and the risk is that the Fed gets behind the curve or it does become slightly structural. So we'll always keep an eye on that. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Remember, we're live every weekday morning. MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available on the website, the app, and of course, wherever good podcasts are aggregated, just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, and Eleanor. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.